2021 was a tumultuous year for legislation and policy at the federal, state, and local level. We sit down with Iowa political reporters and look ahead to 2022 on this Reporters Roundtable edition of Iowa Press.
Funding for Iowa Press was provided by Friends, the Iowa PBS Foundation, the Associated General Contractors of Iowa, the public's partner in building Iowa's highway, bridge, and municipal utility infrastructure.
Fuel Iowa is a voice and a resource for Iowa's fuel industry. Our members offer a diverse range of products, including fuel, grocery, and convenience items. They help keep Iowans on the move in rural and urban communities. Together, we fuel Iowa.
Small businesses are the backbone of Iowa's communities, and they are backed by Iowa banks. With advice, loans, and financial services, banks across Iowa are committed to showing small businesses the way to a stronger tomorrow. Learn more at iowabankers.com.
For decades, Iowa Press has brought you political leaders and newsmakers from across Iowa and beyond. Celebrating 50 years of broadcast excellence on statewide Iowa PBS, this is the Friday, December 24th edition of Iowa Press. Here is Kay Henderson.
The year 2021 will soon be history. When the calendar flips to 2022, a legislative session starts on January 10th. In March, there's a filing deadline when we really find out who's running for what in Iowa, so it's a political year ahead. We've assembled a group of political reporters to talk about what's going on in Iowa. And just as a note for you, because of our schedules and to accommodate that, we are taping this conversation on Friday, December 17th. Joining us today are Aaron Murphy. He is the Lee Enterprises Bureau Chief. There are five Lee Enterprises newspapers in Iowa. Dave Price is the political director at WHO-TV in Des Moines.
There's just one of those.
Okay. Clay Masters is a political reporter, and you hear him on Morning Edition on Iowa Public Radio. And joining us, Kathy Obradovich. She is the editor for the Iowa Capital Dispatch. You see that in some of the state's newspapers and online. Folks, let's begin with a discussion about something you covered this year that you expect to cover in 2022. Let's start with you, Clay. What do you see?
Well, I guess we'll just start with water quality issues. I mean, I've been in Iowa now almost 10 years, and it just continues to be an issue. Concerns over nitrates. There was that big Des Moines Waterworks lawsuit that is now ancient history, it seems. I don't know how much of it's going to be talked about during the 2022 campaign for congressional offices or the governor's office, but it's something that's only becoming more and more of a concern for many people across the state.
Dave Price, what are you looking at?
I'm going to say this, and immediately there will be eye rolls, not from this table, but for people out in the communities, because I just feel like we have to talk about COVID-19 still. This will be the third year of this to some degree, just because some of these numbers are going in the wrong way again. This was a focus. You'll recall earlier this year, the governor had made the focus about get vaccinated. And I think for about 12 seconds, they had Adam Gregg going around the state to try to reach out to men who were resistant to some of this. And I say that sort of sarcastically, I guess, but it was announced one day and I don't really know what all kind of happened with it. But it seems like some of the transition has been going against mandates, but we're kind of stuck, right? And we're seeing these hospitalizations going the wrong way here. It's primarily unvaccinated people, and it impacts things. You have people who refuse to get back into the workplace, some perhaps who've retired early, but it's really holding back where the state can go because there are myriad reasons and fears that people have.
Oh, especially with the rise of the Omicron variant. I don't mean to jump in, but that's, sure, there's still a lot that we don't know yet. In 2022, we're going to learn a lot more.
Aaron Murphy, what have you covered in this calendar year that you expect will bleed over into 2022?
Well, everybody brace for yourselves for the most exciting topic, taxes. So we have a Republican majorities in the Iowa State House, and we have a budget surplus in Iowa. So we are going to without a doubt hear continued discussion on cutting Iowa's taxes. They've done some pretty significant tax reductions in the last few years, including in the 2021 session, but that conversation is going to continue in 2022. What exactly it looks like, what gets cut, is still to be determined, but without a doubt that debate is going to take place once again.
Well, in just a few minutes, let's talk about some of the details that are sort of percolating.
Save more for later.
Exactly. But let's get Kathy in this conversation. What did you cover in 2021 that you expect to cover in 2022?
One of the issues that sort of underlaid a lot of the things that we're talking about is our ability to report on issues through the governor's office and state government. And I dare to say this is something that we have all experienced, which is the non-compliance of the governor's office with the Iowa Open Meetings and Records Law. There have been a number of lawsuits filed, or there have been at least two lawsuits filed. My organization is involved in one of those that was filed this month, along with the Freedom of Information Council and some other media outlets. We will see, of course, how that plays out in the courts. But I just want to put in a plug for the Open Meetings and Records Law. It's very important to democracy. If people do not, if people can't reliably get records from state government, not just media, not just us, people that are, maybe could be considered insiders at the Capitol, but just people walking off the street to their local school board or to their local city council. If they cannot get access to public records in a reliable way, they have to rely on what their elected officials are telling them about what they're doing. And that's really difficult for democracy.
And to add to that point, it's not just the governor's office. We've got a case when a school, Eastern Iowa School District, is trying to charge an online reporter $600,000 to fulfill a public information request, a public records request. So we're seeing more and more cases lately. It's a troubling kind of trend of government being less and less transparent here in Iowa, and that's just not a good way to operate, in my view, and I would hope most people's view that want good governance.
Well, Republicans hope to release a tax plan early in January. Dave Price, what are your sources telling you will be in that plan?
I think the question is how low can they go, right? So the ultimate goal that they have been, it seems to me, more vocal about, especially the last couple of years, is let's try to push this down to nothing. So no personal income tax. And they're talking about it that it could be a competitive advantage for the state. As we all know, this is a slow-growing state. Two-thirds of our state, roughly speaking, population's going the wrong way here. So this has been something that's been discussed, but to me, it seems like they're being maybe more forward, like the governor's talking about it, that's her ultimate goal, right? I'm not sure I remember her talking about that a lot when she first got into office. And they have a ton of money sitting there now that they can use to try to get this going. There was so much. I looked on the Department of Management's website the other day, and if I'm following the numbers right, which could be maybe something I'm not doing right,
math.
But it could be math, which is dangerous. But I think it said that just the COVID-related money, the state's received something like $9.2 billion, something like that, which is essentially what the budget is, give or take a few bucks. So that's a ton of money, and I think they said that $2 billion or so is sitting in there, right? So
that's the taxpayer relief fund you're
right.
Referencing.
Yeah, that in particular. For
by
sure.
By the end of the fiscal year, and the state runs on a fiscal year that ends on June 30th, we learned earlier this month that it would have probably $2 billion.
Right, and so that was discussed during that revenue estimating conference. So that's a good chunk of change, and it seems like they could be on their way. Now, I don't think in 22 the plan would be to get down to nothing, but it seems like they want to make some sizable progress there and focus on personal rather than corporate.
Aaron, do you think they will do both, personal and corporate?
That excellent segue, because that's the point I was going to raise. I monitored a public hearing on the state budget this week, and there were some business groups in interest that talked about hoping that they could lower that corporate tax rate as well. I don't know whether that hasn't been part of the discussion I've heard yet from legislators, but, with a budget surplus like this, I imagine all options will be on the table, and they'll at least have that debate. The one thing I should note about that, though, and we've talked about it, and you mentioned the federal funds, there is some talk, some calls for hesitance from some groups that are saying, Yeah, the budget's healthy right now, but it's being artificially propped up by those federal funds. We had an unusual year coming off the pandemic where receipts were still higher than we expected. So, but actual revenue growth out of that recent meeting that you noted, Kay, and correct me if I'm wrong, I believe actual growth was only like 1 to 3% somewhere.
1.7.
Thank you. So actual budget growth is not significant. So what is the long-term impacts of making a huge revenue reduction?
Well, and the director of the Department of Revenue makes the point that, you know, the 1.7% growth is on top of a year that was, you know, double digit. Right. And then they've raised the revenue estimate for the current state budget year that they're in to 3%, and then growth on top of that would still be healthy, but defined by their calculations as 1.7. Kathy?
You know, I'm not sure there's going to be one plan, Kay. As we have seen with other issues, the House and the Senate may not be playing from the same playbook on this issue. There are some senators who are saying we need to hold out for eliminating the income tax. There are some prominent House Republican members who are saying, you know, this is a moonshot year, but they're not talking about eliminating the income tax. They're talking about maybe a five-year plan to get it down, you know, to 3.99%, something like that, instead. And, you know, there's also people talking about rebates or, you know, some other types of maybe one-time tax rebates until we get out of this pandemic and know where we are, similar to what Aaron was just saying. So I think one thing I'm going to be watching for is to see how close Republicans and Democrats are at the beginning of the year, and then we'll see where they are at the end.
And that's an important point to bring up, is how close the Republicans and the Democrats are, because this is a trifecta, right? The House, the Senate, and the governor's office are all controlled by Republicans. I think during the debate, we're going to see a lot of Democrats talking about having more tax relief for lower and middle class income Iowans, wherever you kind of draw the line on that. But, this is how many years now that Republicans have had the trifecta? It'll be interesting to see how they are able to square off on some of these differences.
Yeah, and I meant to say how close the Republicans and the Republicans are. Not the Republicans and the Democrats,
because
I know they won't
appreciated
be.
You
I know they won't be close.
Bipartisanship?
House, Senate, and governor are all separate entities, and they don't all work together. People don't realize that sometimes.
Yeah, I think you were kind when you said House and Senate Republicans may not have the same plan to start with. I will be shocked if they do.
Yes.
Well, let's shift gears and talk about some of the ballot names that we may see in 2022. We have learned, Clay, in December that we will not see Rob Sand running for governor in the primary.
Yeah, Rob Sand, the auditor, I think he was first elected in 2018 to this office. And as soon as Rob Sand was elected to the auditor's office, Republicans were saying, oh, he's going for the governor. Like, this is the job that he wants to get. And then he released this video of him walking his dog and saying, I've decided that I'm going to run for re-election as auditor, which leaves Deidre DeGeer and Ross Smith from Waterloo, a representative from up there, Deidre DeGeer, a businesswoman from Des Moines. But yeah, I think a lot of people were waiting to kind of see what he was going to do. And of course, we're all, waiting for Governor Kim Reynolds to announce that she's going to run for re-election, but it's assumed that she is going to run.
Dave, what are you hearing about that primary?
On the Democratic side, you know, then I think you're still hearing the whispers about somebody else, though, right? So Chris Hall, the state representative from Sioux City, Pam Yoakum, the state senator from Eastern Iowa.
Who said she's not going to run.
She has ruled it out. Yeah.
Right. But, you know, she was still had people who are, maybe we can get, kind of one more person in here. And I'm not sure there are some in the party that are content with the field as it is right now, not necessarily an indictment on the two who are in there, but just still exploring options here. And I don't know how you pick a favorite out of the two. DeGeer has run for statewide office before.
Yeah. Yeah. And to that, I think that's an interesting aspect about this Democratic field right now, because I get that sense, too, that maybe they're not totally thrilled about this, the completeness of this primary field. But on the other hand, who's left out there now that would make you feel any better? You know, Rob Sanders ruled it out. Cindy Axney has ruled it out. Tom Vilsack isn't walking through that door. I think there's a good chance that this is our field, with the maybe exception of another name like a Chris Hall you mentioned. And the thing about Deidre DeGeer and Roz Smith are they're both very popular, well-liked within Democratic circles. I think a lot of Democrats have a lot of respect for them. They're just not well-known outside of their kind of own political bubbles, and that'll be the challenge taking on an incumbent.
And I think if they were sitting here, they would be candid about this. There's a lack of confidence in the party that 2022 is going to be a good year. They're looking at the polls thinking that Reynolds could be challenging to beat. They have to convince their donors to donate. Mm-hmm. DeGere just got Emily's List involved, so maybe that's going to open up a little out-of-state money, perhaps. But they have to show that they're and convince people that this is a race that is winnable, at least competitive. And that's a hurdle right now.
Yeah. Kathy, you and I covered a gubernatorial race back in the last century in which Tom Vilsack was an unknown Mount Pleasant mayor who at the time was a state senator and wound up beating a fairly well-known congressperson. Does that race have any lessons for what's going on now?
Yeah, I mean, you just don't count people out, I think, is the important thing. I mean, it's a little different when you're running against an incumbent. And Tom Vilsack was running against Jim Ross Lightfoot, who was a congressman who was leaving Congress to run for governor. It may not be a direct lesson, but you absolutely can't count anybody out just because you think people across the state don't know who they are. And thanks for making me feel really old there.
I'll add to that, if you've been around Tom Vilsack for longer than about 5 or 10 minutes, you are aware that he was down in that race by about 30 points right. Very late and came back to win that one. I believe I've heard that story once or twice somewhere.
Well, let's shift to a different story we have all written and will continue to write. Congressional races in Iowa. Let's start with the first district. Clay, we now know who is running in the first district.
The new first district.
The new first district.
Yeah, so we're talking about the southeastern part of this, right? Like I'm trying to train my brain to do this. Marionette Miller-Meeks, who was on last week on this program. She lives in Ottumwa, but she's looking for somewhere to live in the new 1st District. She is going to be running for re-election in this new district.
Air quotes.
Exactly. And then the most high-profile Democrat who has announced is State Representative Christina Bohannon. And it's going to be another competitive district, it looks like, by all means.
Well, let's shift to the 2nd district. Aaron?
The old 1st, new 2nd.
Right.
The 1st and 2nd essentially,
Iowa.
Northeast Iowa, essentially switched spots for the most part. And we've got the race of the former KCRG Cedar Rapids area TV reporters in Ashley Henson, who is similarly running for re-election. She's a first-term congresswoman right now, and she'll be running in a newish district, and she'll be challenged the most again, prominent Democrat in the race is Liz Mathis, state legislator, nonprofit leader, and again, also a former TV worker for the very same station. Oddly, I keep waiting for Dave Price's campaign announcement. Maybe that's 24.
I'm still waiting for a coworker to join me so we can do it.
But that'll be another highly competitive race. A lot of national resources will be poured into that. It's a district that came out of redistricting with some political balance. The voter registration numbers are really close, so both of those races are going to be highly competitive.
Kathy, let's turn to the 3rd district. What's going on there in 2022?
The 3rd district did not change its number, but it did change some of its profile. Some of the territory is different. Cindy Axne, only Democrat left in Iowa's congressional delegation, is expected to run for re-election. She's got a three-way primary on the other side. But interestingly, this district lost part of its urban area. So the biggest part of this district is Polk County. But it also had an urban area in Council Bluffs that was part of the district. They lost that part to now Randy Fien's district in the 4th. That may exacerbate the urban versus rural nature of this race.
But it did, correct me if I'm wrong, Kathy, they did pick up Dallas County, right?
Yes, just
the,
right.
So that which was, a big, was in the current.
Yeah, it's a big population area, but it's also a little bit, there's a lot of rural area in there as well. There's a West Des Moines farmer, for example, Gary Loeffler, who's running on the Republican side. Nicole Hasso of Johnston State Senator Zach Nunn is a recent entry into the race. He's looking at his state house and military background. Nicole Hasso is an African American candidate who has been talking a lot about critical race theory and supporting police. Those kinds of issues. A lot of that race may also be kind of directed against Joe Biden. You know, the Republicans are running against Joe Biden with Cindy Axne as their proxy.
You're seeing that across all of these races already. Yep.
Dave Price, we turn to the fourth, where Randy Feenstra is the incumbent and doesn't look like we have a Democratic primary featuring J.D. Scholten this time around. Rather than talking about a district that has a buku number of Republican voters, let's just shift back and talk about the attention that will be paid to the other three districts.
I don't get to sum up the fourth district.
If you'd like to, go right ahead.
There will be a race in the fourth district next November. just to piggyback a little bit, and we're still waiting to find out. We're not even hearing rumors about Democrats running in the fourth there because of that lopsided disadvantage they have there. But, you know, when you step back and, you know, just listening to each one of you talk about the first, second, and third, those look like three competitive races, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe you would think Axne would have an advantage here being an incumbent and the way the third district is drawn up. But, you know, who knows what 2022 is going to be about? Is it going to be a tougher year for Democrats looking at the president's poll numbers right now? But, you know, the first, second, and third, the new first, second, and third here, it does look like those could be three closely watched races for a variety of reasons and could have some national attention looking at, especially as they start doing the numbers game in Congress for the control of the U.S. House, all three of those could be heavily watched because of that. We could see a lot of outside money. We've already seen it in the Axne race in the third.
And to that point, depending on if and when and how the needle moves, those races could be more interesting and more relevant than the top of the ticket, which is the Senate race.
Most of our viewers, if not all of them, know, Senator Chuck Grassley has announced he'll be seeking re-election, and there's a primary for the chance to face him. Let's shift and talk about the legislature just briefly, Aaron. In late October, the legislature approved the redistricting plan and reconfigured these congressional districts, but they also reconfigured all 150 legislative districts. And people have just sort of self-sorting themselves, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, almost like it's been a coordinated effort, which I suspect in part there has. So you can't tell a legislator without a program these days. There has been a lot of movement all the way up the ladder. Senate Majority Leader Jack Whitfer, Republican from Ankeny, will now be a Republican from Polk City or Almond or some other town in the northern rural area of the district because he's moving into a new Senate district to avoid a district that has become a little more balanced politically, more and more Democrats in that, and he was going to face a tougher challenge had he stayed than he will in this new district.
We have just a couple of minutes left. We have a legislative session coming up, as I mentioned at the beginning, on January 10th. What sort of issues do you expect to percolate and capture the attention of people, Kathy?
Well, I mean, beyond the tax issue, which I think will overlay everything they do, I think there's going to be continued talk about workforce. The governor has every year come with some sort of workforce agenda. Iowa continues to have difficulty attracting people to work. Employers say that is the biggest thing holding them back. That has been the case for a number of years. And so I think that, looking at, for example, infrastructure money that's coming in for the federal government, other money, she has been using other money like COVID money for things like childcare. And I expect that discussion to continue. This is, by the way, an issue that Democrats generally also support investment in Iowa's workforce. They just tend to have different goals than the Republicans do.
Dave, about a minute and a half left. What are you saying?
I think all those things, but I think quick stuff. tax cuts, that's a quick thing, right? It's easy. You're going to remember that November when you're going in there and voting. And I think they're going to lean in on some of these cultural issues. We saw so much more attention on these school board races. So what are these books that are available for kids? The CRT thing, which is overblown and doesn't even exist in our state. But the books, that's a tangible thing that some people have been offended and furious about some of the content of those books. And I would think that'll be a juicy debate this session.
And it'll be interesting how much that's talked about as we're seeing, I mean, to your original point with the Omicron variant and coronavirus, I mean, are we going to be talking more about cultural issues than the ongoing pandemic that is filling hospitals right now?
Sure was the case last year.
Sure was last year, yeah.
We've got about 30 seconds left, Aaron. When people tune into this program in January, they will notice that you have a new employer.
Yeah, and I was going to use it as my example of what I'm expecting in next year's session, and that will unfortunately be the absence of Rod Beauchard of the Cedar Rapids Gazette, who is heading for a very well-earned retirement. And so starting with January, I'm filling in, trying to replace Rod's sizable shoes, and I will be the Des Moines bureau chief for the Cedar Rapids Gazette again. So new job, same as the old job.
Well, and we expect all of you back here in 2022 to tell us what you are learning from legislators and the campaign trail. Thanks to you at home for watching. You can always watch Iowa Press at iowapbs.org, or you can join us at our regular broadcast times at 7:30 on Friday nights and at noon on Sunday. For everyone here at Iowa PBS, happy holidays.
Funding for Iowa Press was provided by Friends, the Iowa PBS Foundation, the Associated General Contractors of Iowa, the public's partner in building Iowa's highway, bridge, and municipal utility infrastructure.
Fuel Iowa is a voice and a resource for Iowa's fuel industry. Our members offer a diverse range of products, including fuel, grocery, and convenience items. They help keep Iowans on the move in rural and urban communities. Together, we fuel Iowa.
Small businesses are the backbone of Iowa's communities, and they are backed by Iowa banks. With advice, loans, and financial services, banks across Iowa are committed to showing small businesses the way to a stronger tomorrow. Learn more at iowabankers.com.